Welcome to Juno Afternoon as we continue to celebrate the Alaska Folk Festival's return to in-person performances. I'm Rhonda McBride.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks everyone. Happy Folk Festival!
Yes, Centennial Hall is now officially back to being Juno's living room. A place during Folk Festival that embraces both professional and homegrown music, which in some cases is a combination of both. So how did this baby get birth? And how did it grow up to be the way it is today? Katie Henry, Bob Bangard, and Mike Truax have brought their instruments to share a few tunes and some memories. Hope you'll join us.
Let me write it in a song. I promise you my words will sound much sweeter with a chance to rhyme. I'll make it clear.
Sheesh for being here with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, as well as the music of Katie Henry, Bob Bangard, and Mike Truax here in the studio today to celebrate the Alaska Folk Festival. Let's start off with some music, and then we'll get to our conversation. Just a taste of what you can enjoy at the Alaska Folk Festival, which is now in day two. So I am joined today by Katie Henry, as well as Bob Bangard, who helped get the Folk Festival started. And Katie's father, Pat, was also a collaborator in the first Folk Festival, as well as Mike Truax, who is pretty much the staple, one of the staple acts of the Folk Festival every year. Mike,
this baloney.
You know, people tell me that your name is circled on the program.
It's printed that way.
Yeah. I remember when I first, there's Michael.
and Mike. And the first time that they was going to have the folk festival, I thought that this was like filling out for a driver's license or something. They're not going to let me on unless I do this right. And that's why I put Michael R. Truex
in the formal.
Yeah. And so that's, I've always said, put it in that way from then on. But
well, I guess, and now people know who you are, and you've left an indelible impression over the years. So, Katie, I was just going to ask you about your dad, and tell us a little bit about him since he's passed on. What his passion was and why he got the festival started.
Well, he was only one of a group of people, and that's how he talked about it too. He was a bunch. We just moved to town, and there was a group of people who wanted to put on a thing, and so he showed up and did it. But there was a big group of people actually part of that.
Probably a dozen.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody that was in it kind of did stuff. Because if it wasn't everybody in it doing stuff, nothing would happen. Chairs had to be moved.
Well, that was 1975?
1975, yeah.
I think in your website it says something like a cold winter in 1975. It was gestated.
There was a bunch of us that worked at the museum in that time period. Alan Monroe, Dan Monroe, Paul Disdare, myself. And we were all playing music, and there was a whole bunch of other people, and Pat and Bob Pavitt and Dale Weigant and John Palms and Av Gross. And I don't know, I'm leaving off a bunch
now,
of
Av
folks.
Gross was an attorney general, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he was attorney general, but he's also a fiddle player, violin player. And there was a whole bunch of people, but somebody said, this sounds like a good idea. And then, so consequently, we tried it,
So what
was?
It was a good idea. Yeah.
So what was the first one like? Paint a picture.
A living room party, with but you couldn't have a beer. Yeah. So that went down in the parking lot, but it was like a living room party. It was we had a small, like probably 8-inch. High riser in the corner of the museum, and people sat on the floor, and everybody got up and shared what they did or what they were trying to do, because there was a lot of trying to do, and then it just kind of grew exponentially from that to a point where it had to get formalized, and become an entity.
So I have to ask, is it true that Merle Travis was the first headliner, and what year did that happen?
Well, it was 1976, I think.
Wow, so early.
Well, yeah, and then we went door to door with number 10 cans and asking people to contribute to bring him up. And you'd be surprised how many people would turn you away when you walk in with a number 10 can with a picture of Merle Travis on it.
Why Merle Travis?
Well, the festival, everybody was interested in, there was a strong interest in people who had done a lot to solidify traditional music, as people who set the stage. The Travis pick was a famous guitar style, and so we tried to reach into the established group of people whom had made an indelible mark in music, in Americana music. And we didn't have any money, and so a lot of people did it for the grins of coming up. I mean, we had J.P. and Annadine Fraley, who were my heroes at the time, learning fiddle. And
so can I ask, I guess maybe you can't tell me if it's confidential, but how much did it cost to bring up Merle Travis? How much did you have to pay him?
Well, we paid his airplane ticket and hotel, and $500.
And you're he kidding. Picked up 500
side,
bucks.
And he picked up a side gig at the Crystal, the old Crystal.
The old Crystal the Saloon, old Crystal. Which is now the new Crystal Saloon.
Right,
opening
the old
up.
Crystal, I don't think, what is even exists anymore, no. But I think.
It's
but,
a diamond store or
diamond
something.
Diamond store, yeah. I mean, there's a future. Yeah. But yeah, so he came up. I mean, but here's some individual whom had gone to the top and gone to the bottom and come back and was being revered as a master of his particular idiom. And was willing to come up and share that with us, and yeah, he was phenomenal. I mean, dang, that guy.
Yeah.
He had nudie suits. And if you know what a nudie suit is.
I don't.
Nudie suits. Nudie was a fashion designer for the country western industry. And if you see these guys like Porter Wagoner wearing all these sequin suits with all the cowboy imagery on it and stuff, they're highly valuable collectors. And they're also really gorgeous. And so he came he stepped off the airplane wearing this brown suit with wagon wheels and stuff on it. It was, it was something.
Well, that's what I remember. I remember as a kid, because I was, I was 7, 8 years old then. And I remember, I have never seen a suit like that ever. He is not from here. It was very exciting.
So
that's probably
many
the first
sequins.
One I went to.
The first one?
Yeah. No, the second one.
Yeah.
It wasn't the first one. I wasn't here for that. But so whenever he was there.
76. I'm pretty sure that was
what
it.
What drew me in to going.
Was him.
Yeah. Well, and I knew you guys.
Yeah.
That's an interesting combination of reasons to go.
Well, it was, we're talking, when Juno was, half the size it is now?
Oh, gosh, yes.
You know, and the museum was a focal point for a lot of stuff, and you made your own entertainment, you know. I mean, that's back in time when you could get a glass of wine for a dime over at Bullwinkle's.
Sure.
So that's ancient history.
Well, the festival is now in its 47th iteration. You're 3 years away from a half century. When did the festival sort of become iconic for Juneau, sort of a cultural milestone, a rite of spring?
I don't know if I could put a date on it. I mean, I wrote some liner notes one time for a thing, and the question was posed, when does an event become a tradition?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to say. Moving to Centennial Hall was a big deal.
Right, because it was in the museum, the old museum.
And then, actually, don't you remember the controversy when it went to the Armory?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was a heated battle in the public press because
why?
Some people didn't think it should do that. And it should never leave the museum, but the museum outgrew, the festival outgrew the museum. And then we had the high school for a few years. We used to do the Sunday shows at the high school.
Oh, yeah?
Like when Lydia Mendoza was here, we had the high school show there, and that didn't work out so well. But when Centennial Hall became available, but that wasn't until 1980. When did it get built? 82? Anyway, when it became available, it became useful.
Well, and it was stretching for space, and there was question of there are tickets, and you could, there was a, free, but,
yeah.
People
limited
couldn't.
Space.
Yeah, there was limited space. And, yeah.
And one year, when the Armory first came into play, John Ingalls had this idea, and he decked out the Armory, entirely covered all the walls with sleeping bags and quilts. That was when Jethro Burns was here.
So for acoustics?
For acoustics, yeah. It felt like you were in a koozie.
That's right.
I have to picture that.
It helped a little.
It did help a lot, yeah. It helped a lot.
Quilts and sleeping.
But it went from one night to two nights to three nights to five nights to seven nights. And that's kind of where it's topped out. I don't think I couldn't live through more than 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
So. Well, Mike, I want to ask you, when did you see the festival sort of come into its own? At what point, beyond just moving into Centennial Hall, what was going on with the music?
The music became, has grown more into singer-songwriters. A lot of people are doing more songwriting now than they were. It seemed like there was more covers back then. I've always done covers. I would listen to other people's original songs, and I would go, there's John Prine. Steve Goodman. I think
who else is
it's
there?
Already been done. Why mess with what I considered perfection?
Yeah.
And for me, a big thing was a lot of people here had never heard of them. I came from L.A., and so John Prine and Jerry Jeff Walker A little bit.
And I think Jerry Jeff has passed too, hasn't he? Or is
yes,
he still alive?
All three of those, so my heroes, Jerry Jeff, Shel Silverstein, John Prine, and Steve Goodman.
Yeah, Steve a long time ago.
A long time ago, early 80s.
But you keep their music alive. And you know, one of the things, too, is there were certain people in the folk festival that, like yourself, Mike, that kind of became associated with it. And I'm thinking of Buddy Tabor, who recently they celebrated the anniversary of his death, 10 years. And and just before we got on the show, you were telling me about the story of your guitar. And that's a delightful story. I hope you can share how you came to acquire it and who it originally belonged to.
This guitar is Buddy's guitar. A mutual friend of ours, Kirk McBride, and who used to play with their little Friday night group together with Kurt, and Buddy would show up and play with us gratefully. And So Kirk bought it, and then Kirk was moving to, because after his wife retired, they moved to, I think, Arizona. And he called me up and said, you know, I've got Buddy's guitar, and it needs to stay here. And he said, I'll take $800 for it. And, I went out the next day and bought it.
So do you feel some of Buddy's energy in that guitar?
Well, no.
I don't know. I can just see him playing.
It's mentally, yes, but I don't know. I'm not real.
I don't see any cigarette burns.
But there's.
I've quit smoking.
He was
heavy.
So.
Him and I both.
So right now, I am joined in our studios by Katie Henry, Bob Bangart, and of course Mike Truax, and they're sharing stories and some music. So, Mike, since you've got that Buddy Tabor guitar in your hand, why don't you lead us off into a break with another song?
We going to do a Billy Horner?
Yeah, do Billy.
We'll do a Billy Horner song. Billy Horner was someone who was around for... maybe not the first, but...
I don't think he ever really left us.
Yeah.
Larger than life, that man.
For those who knew Billy, they have not forgotten him.
No.
Billy's Blue Yodel. Well, Friday night ain't no night to be lonesome, and it's no night to be sitting all alone. And in my room I'm writing you this letter, darling, wishing, dear, that someday you come home. Well, I ran around so much, so long I hurt you. Now happiness to me will not return. And in my room I'm sending you man gets your love in return. That's why I'm blue. I'm lonesome and blue. I'm just blue. That you left me to go on my drunken way. Oh, but words could never say how much I'm sorry, darling, for every day since in there you've been away. So now you see why Friday nights are lonesome, and just why there is no smile on my face. Cause I lost my heart on that day that I lost your sweet love. I let this whiskey bottle take your place.
That's why I'm blue.
I'm lonesome and blue. I'm just blue.
KTOO is excited to present An Evening with David Sedaris, Wednesday, May 18th at 7 p.m. at the Juno Douglas High School Yada Akaple Auditorium. David Sedaris returns to Juno for one night only for a special book reading and signing. Hearthside Books will be on location with copies of David's books for purchase. Tickets and more at ktoo.org/Sedaris. Support for this event made possible in part by Zentropa Services.
Hey, it's me. Your cell phone. We need to talk about something. Something serious. I know you love me. I know you like using me wherever you are. But I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road, but I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Paid for by Alaska Highway Safety Office.
If you feel sick or have been exposed to COVID, get tested for COVID-19. Free molecular tests are offered at CBJ's drive-thru testing site. Register online at juno.org/COVID-19 or call 907-586-6000 from 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, or Saturdays. That's juno.org/COVID-19 to get a free molecular COVID test 5 days a week, closed on Wednesdays and Sundays. This message sponsored by the CBJ.
This program is made possible by Zentropa Services, serving the Juneau community since 2010 with home repairs and maintenance services. Zentropa Services strives to provide skillful and artful solutions to problems. 907-500-2703.
This is a song from last night's concert. The group is called Your Favorite Heartbreak, and it features Taylor Vidic, Roshna McChesney, Marianne Call, and Kelsey Riker.
Forget it's our ticket to taking the risk, and we'll all be okay. We'll be okay. Dusty trails can lead you to a golden. It's all the man.
was your favorite heartbreak playing last night? Kind of one of those groups that forms ad hoc at folk festivals. Different talented people come together. But it's kind of an example of the range of talent. This being some of just wonderful talent. The girl harmonies are just amazing. And so I want to bring back our guest today, Katie Henry, Bob Bangert, and Mike Truax, just to get some sense from them about how they think the festival has evolved and the level of talent that now comes to the festival.
You know, it's kind of interesting. The local folks tend to play earlier in the week because we live here, and that brings a Juno-intensive flavor to what happens during the week. And then over the weekend, a lot of folks come from up north and around and about. And there's an idea that, you know, things get better on the weekend. They are fantastic on the weekend. There's some fantastic players that come down and groups that come down. But it's also the case that, you know, local folks bring high-quality music. Yeah. I don't know if that's quite what you were getting at. You know, well, there's a flow to the week that's evolved over time because of who can play when.
That's true, but I mean, I think on any given night you're going to find something wonderful to hear.
Right.
And really, even for those who are just beginning their musical journey, that's quite a joy as well. And in a moment here, I'm going to play an excerpt from a group called Nora that played last night. That was so much fun. But Bob, you know, what are your thoughts as the guy who was in on the beginning of the festival?
Well,
what we hear today, how is it much different? Or
it's like any process, you know. It's like, and what I like about the festivals up here is it's about the music. You know what I mean? It's about playing. And so you come into it at whatever level you're at, and it's the obligation of the players that are above you, skill level wise, to give you a hand. And so it's more about that exchange, and it's stayed in that arena and hasn't transferred from that because, one, it hasn't been commodified, and it hasn't been stratified by performer versus audience, because the audience is a performer, is the audience. And so it takes away some of the inhibitions, if you were, to say, well, I can't do that. And so you say, well, I can do that. And so you got a really deep school of musical interest in town that's pushed from a young age, and they keep coming through and developing and developing and developing. So if you see someone up there that's just breaking ground on trying to play, that somewhat gives you license to do the same. You know, it's the ones that spend 20 years playing the same song and never do anything different that you sort of challenge perhaps their intent. But for the most part, everybody gets better, you know, and I always make fun of myself and anybody. So it's like it's the good, the bad, and the indifferent. You know what I mean? It's like you got really incredible, you got really not so good, and then people that just do it to do it. But I really feel it's about the sharing of the tunes, the techniques, the intent, the attitude. And you can't, it's really hard to cop an attitude here. You get chewed up pretty bad.
Well, you know, we were talking too about the years of the Golden Ham. And there were years before the Golden Ham and the years of the Golden Ham. And beforehand, you know, that's been totally formative to grow up in a festival where people come and go from the audience, you know, constantly. You know, it's a flow from audience to stage, and you play, and your neighbor plays, and their neighbor plays, and then, you know, you go up and play again. And, you know,
so
there's a lot
of Golden Ham.
Well, you know, it gets at this supporting of one another, you know, and helping people up or being helped up. But there were some years when so many people started to want to play that there was some challenge about why should some people get up on stage more? And I don't know. It didn't bother me. I love seeing people get up in different configurations. I love seeing somebody up there seven different times with different people. But there was a time when there was a kind of a booby prize that was created.
It was sculpted
Lucas, yeah.
Golden ham made by Laura Lucas, and it was stuffed and articulated in the end. It looks like a golden ham. And the idea was to publicly shame the person whom had gone up this time. But as it turned out, it became a badge of honor.
That's
and
right.
So he had people competing for it. So they would wait till the last minute. They would run up for the last tune and then run off and then they'd keep score. And then at the end, you'd get presented with the golden ham. You'd wear it around your neck, around, you know. And so it served its purpose. It diffused the tension that was being created by the whole idea that so many, you can only play so many times. I mean, that kind of got off on the wrong foot. And now it's like, whatever, you know. It's just, it's in the archive of the objects of this festival, of which there are a few iconic elements that remain floating around in people's closets.
Well, there are several craziness elements which, you know, are floating away. I think, craziness, there is some wild energy that happens that's tamed a little bit. And I want to see that back sometimes. You know, Riley Woodford and I lived up in Fairbanks for a while, and the ham was over our bed for a while and for a year. And I think it was a shame. It was definitely effectively shaming. And he came back and started to work on the board when he moved back to Juneau and put, like, tithed in his time on the board to pay back for all of that hammy time that he was up on stage. And
What is that? Before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. You know, and so it just really brought you back to the point. Why are you here?
Right. But I think that's interesting, though, that you would solve a problem that way with humor. I mean, and I guess that's kind of what the folk festival is all about, is kind of this community and camaraderie and goodwill. And you know, Mike, how do you feel about how things have evolved over the years with people jumping into different groups and in and out of them?
Well, the thing that has remained consistent is the non-commercial thing of it. It's not about the money. Nobody's paid. Nobody has to pay to get in. And so they sell memberships. They've got to feed the kids somehow. And they sell wonderful sweatshirts, which I always make sure I dress up for radio shows. I have one on.
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up here is this group called Nora that played, because they were made up of mostly kids.
Yeah,
but
the kid fiddle players, right?
A mix of some adults thrown in there, too, old and new. But anyway, let's listen and talk about it on the other side here.
The last song is Irish Washerwoman, and thank you all for coming.
They managed to work a trombone and a flute there. What does this performance speak to?
everybody's welcome. Yeah. You know, everybody's welcome. It's on when you're on the board and you see people you don't know and just kind of go, well, okay. They say they do this, they do that, and they've never been on before, so let's put them on. You know, you don't know what you're going to get. And that's the Folk Fest, the good, the bad, and the indifferent, I guess. I mean, it's if you don't like what you're hearing, you know, hang around.
Well, and having done, you know, gone and worked on festivals down south, and the University of Chicago Folk Festival is, it's an institution, but it's a completely different animal, and there are a lot of players that show up there. That I just, that the welcoming to newcomers, even, you know, you don't know what you get, but sometimes it's fantastic, and sometimes it's growing. Yeah, one of the things needs a stage.
One of the things that Nora said before she began her set, Nora Fortier, and I guess she had her family members as part of this crew, Natalie, Sandy, I guess is her mom, Luke Fortier, as well as Lori Clow, and they build themselves as friends of music, young and old. But one of the things that Nora said is, I'm very nervous. And the crowd just kind of embraced her.
And it diffused. You know, her nervousness kind of diffused a little bit, you know, because that's what that audience does.
But what is it about the Folk Festival that there is this encouraging atmosphere for performers?
It's a living room.
Yeah, it's very casual.
Yeah, it's like you're playing in your living room. I mean, that's when it's at its best for me.
Well, and I, you know, there's a progression because it's been 47 years. You know, it may be, 43 years ago when I played my first festival, probably with Lori Clow, as a matter of fact.
And tell us about Lori Clow.
She was my music teacher at Capitol School here. Huh. And she would, you know, music teachers still do that. They bring groups of kids up. And kids get a first chance to stand on stage and say they're nervous, feel nervous, be in the company of other people who feel nervous, and they survive. And then they come back, you know, to try another year. And, you know, one thing we were talking about as we were listening to that is the high quality of presentation that those kids just made.
That was practiced.
It was very practiced, yeah. And to learn how to formally walk a line between a formal presentation and a living room presentation, yeah. It's incomparable. You know,
I think Nora has potential practice. As a future MC for the...
They all do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember I used to literally black out my first song. I could not remember my first song. I would be so scared.
You forget the words?
No, I would have it down so pat that usually wouldn't happen. But I could not remember going back and looking at it and going, God, did I do that right? I can't even remember. So I'd have to listen to the tape and find out if I got all the words right. I was that scared. And I still get scared. Of course, you know, I mean, that's the only time I ever play in front of people is at the Folk Fest. And that's another thing that it does allow. It allows the people who play like I do, you know, single solo guitar, another place to play, because you can't play in bars. I can't play in bars. It's, you know.
No.
It's a listening room.
Yeah, it's listening. People listen there, and you know. So there's not too many venues where you can do that.
No. And also I get a feeling in the room of enjoying other people's enjoyment. just looking at their faces, watching the little kids wiggle around and move to the music as if nobody's watching and having the time of their life.
Yeah, they do a good job. Daycare, they get the kids, and then when you're performing, all you can see is the kids because they're right in front, and everything else is black.
Yeah.
You can't see anything back there. Which is good for somebody who's really nervous. It is. It's wonderful. I can look right straight back, and I'm just going to look at Lucy
back in the soundboard,
and yeah, there's nobody there. It's just like I'm back in my bedroom. Oh, wow. The lights off.
Well, I think that before we run out of time, we've got to do another song here. So, Katie, it's your turn, and we're trying to recreate the Juno living room feel of the folk festival. But we're here at KTOO in our studios here with Bob Manghart and Katie Henry, as well as Mike Truax. So, Katie, can you give us another song?
Well, I was going to do a tune that I wrote for Buddy Tabor. But it doesn't have much of a chorus, just noodle.
I'll do a Top Ramen.
That's the next band name, Top Ramen. We noodle, always noodle. Noodles forever. Yeah, it's called Tell a Story to the World. And he spent a lot of time talking about all this kind of stuff up at my folks' kitchen. He inspired a lot of, he really supported a lot of people too. So. You have lost, you have won, you've hung back on the track to let the other horses run. You do it now, you did it then. I printed out the words and it's missing a line. Just put one foot in front of the other and don't stop. Tell a story to the world of the good race. You painted red. Stephen.
you stumble as you walk it, but don't stop now. Tell the story to the world along the way.
Beautiful. And just sort of a flavor of what's in store for you if you haven't been to the Folk Festival that goes on through Sunday. You know, just we've got time for maybe one more song. And so I thought maybe what we would do is say goodbye right now. I see that Bob Bangert is flexing his fingers here.
Oh.
Hope we haven't exhausted you because you got a long ways to go before the end of the festival. But anyway, let's go out. And I just want to thank you, Katie Henry, and Bob Bangert for joining us, as well as Mike Truax. So thanks so much for being here and giving us an appreciation of this beautiful Juno tradition.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So, Mike, take us out.
Katie's going to take us out. We're all going to take us out.
We're going to take us out. You can sing along at home. It's a Carter Family tune called Hello, Stranger.
Big living room.
Hello, stranger. Put your loving hand in mine. Hello, stranger. Your loving hand in mine. You are a stranger. Working man, lay down, get up round her. Let a working man lay down. You are a rounder. You're all out of town. Sixth and fourth streets car every time. I ride the sixth and fourth street car. I can see my baby peeping through the bars. She bowed her head, waved both hands at me, bowed her head, and waved both. Prison bar, I'm a longing to be free.
You.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Juno Afternoon, and we have been enjoying some of the flavors of the Folk Festival. Tomorrow, we want to let you know that we have a very special guest. Jake Blunt will be joining us. He's the headliner, a banjo player extraordinaire, but also a bit of a musical historian. So be sure and tune into Juno Afternoon. And now, back to our special guest today, Bob Banghart, and Mike Truax, and Katie Henry.
And morning light the dove, we can have a look. Morning like a dove, there's a girl I'm country that I really love. Hello, stranger, put your loving hand in mine. Hello, stranger, put your loving hand in mine. You are a stranger.